Okay, it's recording. Okay, this is a flip flop schema of Nathaniel, Ben, Emmanuel, and Abel. I had to knock Nathaniel, Ben, Emmanuel, and the Abel. And then who else were they?
Okay.
It was in the new schema, I think?
Not that I
know.
Not
that I know. Okay. Shkoyach. All right. So tonight we are on to Taras HaMishpacha, review share number 2. Last week we discussed some basic hashkafic issues related to Hilchos Nida, and we discussed some other basic issues as they relate to Hilchos Nida. For example, the overview of the cycle we discussed. We discussed the question of Hargasha, Bizman Hazeh, and we began to discuss other parts of the cycle, the 5 days, where does that come from? The Hefsek Tara and the Moch Dachuk. So tonight, God willing, we're going to discuss the following topics as well as we can. We're going to discuss the question of Shiva Nakiyim, again, the seven actual days that she has to be clean. We'll discuss that and some of the details behind that. We'll discuss the bedikos that go with that, the checks that she has to do to see if she still sees blood. We'll discuss the question of the maros, what colors are acceptable and not acceptable. Again, very basic, no, not too many details, but just the basic ideas about Maros. And then the second half of this year, we'll discuss the question of Ksamim, just the understanding of what is a Kesem, what is a stain, how is that different than the regular case of Nida Doraisa, and what are the major leniencies that are relevant within the question of Ksamim. Okay. So let's start with just a basic understanding of Shiva Nakiyim. As we mentioned last week, Shiva Nakiyim is a Chumra Midrabbanan. Midaraisa, a Nida does not require 7 clean days. Midaraisa, all a woman who is a Nida has to do is wait 7 days. At the end of 7 days, as long as she knows that she is clean, she may have to do a Hefsek Tara of some sort. She can just go to the mikvah as long as she's clean. Midrabbanan, Chazal, Ramachmir, based on the sugya of Zava, which we discussed last time very, very briefly, so the people shouldn't get confused. So they were machmir, just like a zava has to wait if a zava has that type of emission for a couple days. So they have to keep Shiva Nakiyim 7 clean days, meaning every day has to be completely clean. So too for Nida, we also are machmir that she must keep Shiva Nakiyim. She has to be clean the entire 7 days. So let's look at source number 1. This is the Shulchan Aruch in Kuf Tzadivav. Shulchan Aruch says as follows: Hashiva Nakiyim Tzarech Shiyu Ritzuvim Shelo Tzirah Dam Bahem. The 7 clean days have to be continuous, meaning it has to be 7 clean days in a row that she cannot see blood during that time. She Imrasa Dam, that if she sees blood, Afilu Basof Yom Hashvi, even if she sees blood at the very, very end, the very last day, very last couple minutes before it's time to go to the mikvah, unfortunately, Sasra Kol Hayamim, she destroys, so to speak, all the days that came beforehand, meaning she has to start all over again. And she would have to go back, do another Hefsek Tara, and count Shiva Nakiyim all over again. Again, as we mentioned, that's because all 7 days have to be clean on her, from blood. And if that's not the case, then she has to start all over again. That's the basic halacha of Shiva Nakiyim. Now, let's go on a little bit more. What are the details of Shiva Nakiyim in terms of what she has to do? So there are two main things that are done during Shiva Nakiyim. We mentioned them a few minutes ago. One is bedikos, and the second one is begadim levanim, white clothing. So we'll do the begadim levanim first. That's source number 2. So this is also the Shulchan Aruch in Sid Gimel. The day that she stops seeing blood, and she checks herself as mentioned. This is referring now to the Hefsek Tara. Hefsek Tara we discussed last week. So the day that she completes her Hefsek Tara and it's clean, so then the next day, she should put on a clean clothing that has no stains on it. And that night, meaning after it's already nightfall, then she would put on sheets that are clean from ksam. I apologize. I think I said this a little bit differently than what the Shulchan Aruch says. Let's try this again. right after the Hefsek Tara is done, which would be the very end of sunset of, let's say, for our 5 days, which would be on the fifth day. Right after sunset, on the fifth day, she's finished her Hefsek Tara, and she's finished her Moch Dachok, she's clean. That's the point when she puts on clean clean clothing, clean undergarments that do not have any stains on it. At night, she'll make sure that her sheets that she wears or whatever other types of things today do not have any ksamim on them, don't have any stains, to make sure that if there would be some blood that she would see, she would know that the blood is coming from now and not coming from a previous stain from before her period had been completed. That's, again, the basic halacha. We'll discuss this more in detail as we go along. Starting the next day, meaning the first day, the first morning of Shiva Nakim, then Taschil Lispor Shiva Nakim. She begins counting Shiva Nakim. Here's where the Rama mentions the white garments. Hagah, the Rama adds, Umin HaKasherhu Kisha Isha Posekas Betara, and it's an appropriate minhag that when the Isha, when the woman is Posekas Betara, she does her Hefsek Tara, Shetirchas, she washes herself with Loveshas Levanim, and she wears white. Even if she didn't wash the whole area, she just washed the area, what we call the osamakom, that area where the blood comes from, that's also sufficient. But the minhag is that she should wear white and she should wash the whole area if she can. Aval b'shasa d'chak kegon isha ha'olechas b'derach ve'im la'begadim, if she's traveling and she doesn't have enough clothes, tu chalis por shivan akiyim raksha chaluk yen akiyu v'aduk midam. She can count the shivan akiyim, just make sure that she has clean clothing. So what's going on? To summarize, we're saying as follows. The Shulchan Aruch is holding that that she should wear simply a clean clothing, okay, clean undergarments that do not have any stains on them, so that if she sees stains, she can she'll know that it's something which is from now. The Rama is adding, and this is generally the custom for basically everybody. The Rama adds that we have the general custom of wearing white. That's begadim levanim, and the reason is to make sure that if she sees a kesem, she sees some sort of blood on her white garment, so she'll know that she is still bleeding, and she would have to start again. That seems to be the reasoning behind the Rama here. And then the Rama says, if you're stuck, meaning if shas d'chak, if you can't get begadim levanim because you're traveling, you don't have enough, so then you can be make, you'll like the first opinion in the Shulchan Aruch, and you can just make sure to wear clean undergarments rather than white undergarments. That's basically what's going on here. Okay, so that's in terms of begadim levanim. I should just mention that there are some other kulas for begadim levanim that we should be aware of. Because of the fact that this is really only a minhag that the Rama brings down, so there is some room to be makil in certain situations. Again, this is not something that we usually do without the advice of a rav. Meaning, if this question happens, you really have to speak to you have to consult. But just to be aware, basically, it does sometimes happen, unfortunately, that that you have spotting during the Shiva Nakim. That for whatever reason she's having difficulty getting through the 7 days without spotting. And certainly, if you have spotting of blood on white garments, so generally speaking, as we'll see, that's usually assumed to be a problem. That's usually assumed to make her tummy again, and she usually would have to start all over again. The details of that we'll get to in a couple minutes. But assuming that that could be a problem, so the question is, you know, if she's stuck, what do we want her to do? She's, you know, what are we supposed to do with her? So in those kinds of cases, there are achronim that say that you can be makil and allow her to wear colored garments, which we'll see in a few minutes, might be more lenient in terms of whether she's tummy or not with colored garments, if it's going to help her get through the Shiva Nakim. Again, the basis for that, we'll see shortly that colored garments may not be tummy if she sees blood on them. So the Acharonim are saying that, again, if you're in a tough situation, that maybe during Shiva Nakim you also can wear colored garments, even though that's not normally done according to the Rama. But again, that's something that needs to be discussed with the Rav before you just do it on your own, because it, you have to decide whether it's really necessary to do that or not. There are other options as well for cases of spotting. It could be to cut down the amount of bedikos that she does. Other issues, depending on what the source is and why she's spotting. Sometimes it's based on birth control, which we'll discuss in a couple shiurim. Again, every case is a little different, so you have to consult with the Rav. But that's just be aware that there is a little bit of room for leniency in certain situations. Okay. That's in terms of wearing white. Let's go to the next points. What do you have to do in terms of bedikos during the Shiva Nakim? So if we look at source number 3, the Shulchan Aruch here in Sif Dalet, and so in Kuf Tzadibav, says the following. B'chol yom mishiva yimei ha-sfira, tzricha lios bodekas l'chadchila pa'amayim b'chol yom. Every day during the 7 days of Shiva Nekiyim, she must check herself, she must do bedikas l'chadchila twice every day. Achas shacharis v'achas tamach l'bein hashmashas. One in the morning and one in the afternoon close to nightfall. That is the l'chadchila din according to the Shulchan Aruch. Now, that's the only the L'chadchila din, but the Eved were a little bit more lenient. Continue in the Shulchan Aruch. V'im lo badka b'chol ha-shiva ela pam achas, if she only checked one time during the entire Shiva Nekiyim, lo shna badka b'yom rishon shel ha-shiva o b'yom ha-shvi o b'echad me'am tzoyim, me'achan shabadka b'yom shekodem ha-shvi u'matza tahora alula. The first opinion in the Shulchan Aruch here is that if she only checked herself one time during the Shiva Nekiyim, but the Eved, if she checked herself on the first day, or the seventh day, or any day in the middle, since she checked herself, he says, "Biyom shekodem hashvi," before the seventh day, meaning before the seventh day is finished, and she found herself tower, then the halacha is that that works. Aval im lo badka b'chol hazayin, if she did not check at all, biyom hashmini badka, let's say she did not check herself at all during the Shiva Nekiyim, and then on the eighth day, she checked herself and found herself to be klei matza Torah, ein lo ela yom ches bilvad, that does not work. That only gives her the eighth day as the first day of Shiva Nekiyim because she didn't check at all during the Shiva Nekiyim. So how can we be sure that she was clean if she didn't do the required bedikos?
I just want to clarify. She checked before she went to the Shiva Nekiyim, right?
No, yeah, we're, this is did, right, correct.
She checked before, and then from then on, she didn't check.
Correct. Okay. The Hefsek Tara in these cases was done. She did a Hefsek Tara. She is definitely, her period has finished officially. However, we need now to have the Shiva Nekiyim to be clean during those 7 days. If she didn't check even once during those 7 days, you have no assurances that she's clean. That's the first opinion of the Shulchan Aruch.
It's not just that you said the next morning is when you start the Kamehameha Seven.
Yeah.
The Hefsek Tara is not considered part of that.
Correct. Not considered. It has to start for the next day.
So it's just one check in that 7 day period, you're saying.
That's the first opinion of the Shulchan Aruch here. Okay. Again, L'chadchila, the Shulchan Aruch says, we paskin according to the Rishonim that say that L'chadchila you should check twice every day, once in the morning, once in the afternoon. Bidi Eved, according to the first opinion in the Shulchan Aruch, even if you checked once during those 7 days, that's okay. However, that's not the accepted opinion, usually. Okay. The Yesh Omrim, Shetzarech,
there's a very wide range between checking twice a day.
Yes. So again, there's all...
Usually, I mean, if you find Kumras or Kulas, they're usually not that wide.
Correct. We'll get to that. Just give me another minute or two, and then I'll explain a little bit more. And then if you still have questions, we can you can ask again. Let's just finish the Shulchan Aruch here. V'yesh Orim Shetzarech Shetivdok Bayom Rishon Me'ashiva U'Biyom Hashvi Ve'Ein L'Hakel. The second opinion of the Shulchan Aruch is a little bit more ma'achmer. He says that even B'di Eved, you have to check on the first day and on the seventh day, the Ein L'Hakel. And the conclusion is you cannot be lenient about this, meaning that basically this is assumed to be the opinion that we generally follow, meaning even B'di Eved, you have to have the B'dika on the first day and on the seventh day, with some exceptions, which we'll maybe discuss in a minute. But the general accepted halacha is that B'di Eved, if you did only on the first day or only on the seventh day, B'di Eved is usually not allowed, and you would have to start all over again. Basically, the way that it works here is as follows. There are different opinions in the Rishonim about exactly how much you have to check during Shiva Nekiyim, and this might be depending on how you look at a little bit of lumdus behind it, which we don't really have time to get into here, in terms of what is the point of Shiva Nekiyim. Is it that you should make sure that she didn't see any blood at all, and you have to check all the time to make sure she didn't see any blood, or do we just have to have a general sense that that she didn't see blood, and which case, if you checked once and you saw there wasn't blood, and you know that, you know, before she goes to the mikveh, you can assume that based on that one time that there's a chazakah that she's still clean. That's the range. Okay, that's the range. And again, it's based on different rishonim.
But it's not what you're saying. It doesn't seem to be that there's a range at all.
So again, halacha lemaisa, correct. Halacha lemaisa, what we do is basically we say that l'chadchila we take the more stringent position that in order to really be certain that she's clean, we need to check all the time. So therefore, we follow the Rishonim L'chadchila that say that you have to check twice every day to make sure that she really is clean every single day. That's the L'chadchila approach. But the Eved, if she didn't do that, or but the Eved, we'll see in a second what the other types of kulas might be. So then we rely on the more lenient opinions, which say as long as you check at least twice, meaning at the beginning and at the end, so we can assume the chazakah that everything along the way also was clean. Okay, meaning if she checked on day one, she was clean. She checked on day seven and she was clean, then you can assume that everything in between is also clean. That's the general assumption. I know there's more lumpness to it than that, but that's, I guess for now, I think that's sufficient for us.
If she
she skipped one of the 14 checks,
right,
you're already in a situation of petty effort. It's not an excuse for skipping that. Then.
Correct. Okay, let's go through that now. Okay, so Bidi Eved, again, this is the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch. I should just make mention also that Rabbi Willig from YU, one of my Rabbeim, said he's a little bit more makil even than the Shulchan Aruch. He feels that today, two bidikos a day is too much. He feels that it gets too irritated and sometimes causes more problems. He feels that there might be, even be room lechatchila to allow only one bidika a day. That's not usually the common practice. Most people, if they're not following him, are recommended to do two bidikas a day in a regular, ideal situation. But you should be aware that there is a shita out there, a major shita, my Rebbe, who says that you shouldn't do two bidikas a day. That you should do only one, and it's recommended to do it in the morning to make sure that that it gets done. Okay. In terms of missing bidikas, let's say that you're doing two bidikas a day, or even if you're following the one bidika a day opinion. If you missed bidikas along the way, so again, but the evet, as we see here, there's absolutely no problem, meaning we paskin that it's okay. L'chachila, of course, you should try to do them all, but if you forgot some, if you missed some, if you didn't do it at the right time, so that's definitely bidi evet, would be okay, and you continue from where you left off, and you don't say forget all the rest of them, you continue to do all the rest of them as they're supposed to be done. Now,
is one of the prerequisites, sorry to...
That's fine, no, please.
I'm getting a little bit off topic, stop.
I will, Thor.
Is one of the prerequisites for getting married in Israel through the Rabbanut that you will follow the laws of Tarat and Mishpacha and know it?
It's supposed to be. Whether that actually happens in every single situation, I can't tell you, but what they're supposed to do is when they get married through the Rabbanut, they're supposed to bring a letter, some sort of ishur from their chasan and kala teacher saying that they were taught the laws of Tarat and Mishpacha. So they know what to do.
Say again. In terms of
what? Meaning that they can get married?
It's almost like a secret that you know that some people are going to get married and not follow the laws of Taras and Mishpacha.
You're saying in terms of the rabbi who marries them knows that they're not going to be keeping Taras and Mishpacha.
Or at least has a very good chashash that they won't be.
Right.
So
okay.
Again,
okay.
I don't want to get off topic.
Okay, so that is, it's a little bit off topic. If I remember correctly, there's a tshuva about this from the Netziv, from Naftali Tzihu Berlin. I believe the Netziv has a tshuva in the Meshiv Dover about this question, not in the Rabbanut, but when he lived in the Lajan or whatever. So I think he wanted to say that maybe it could be Mekil, or the Masadar Kedushin could be Mekil. The question there is a Lifnei Iver question. Are you violating Lifnei Iver, you know, helping somebody else sin by getting them married when you know they're not going to be keeping it? I think he had grounds to make ill. If you want more information, I have to look to see where it was. But he had a bunch of different reasons why he felt that it was not necessarily a problem with Nate either. Today, I think they try to at least teach, make sure that people have been taught Taras Mishpacha. And then if they choose to not follow it, that's something that you can't guarantee at the time that they get married anyway. Meaning they are taught the halachos as much as best as they can. And then, you know, we try to get them to say that they'll try to follow it. And you know, if they don't, then that's not our responsibility. I mean, we did what we could. That's, I think, the way that it usually works, but again, you know, that's I haven't had so much experience with it. If you want more information, I can speak to my brother-in-law, who works for the Mishpat HaTatzot in Eilat. He always tells me plenty of stories of all sorts of couples that come to him to get married that have much worse problems than that. So I'll see what else he has to say about that question. But generally, they do require some sort of yeshur, which I've given before for a chassan that I've taught in Eretz Yisrael, that I taught them Taras Mishpacha, they learned the halachas properly. That's basically the best you can do in these types of situations. Okay.
It's better to teach them.
Another good question. Another good question. The answer is probably yes, because it could be that they might keep it. If you are 100% sure that they will not keep anything, then it's still a question.
Also, at some point during the line, things change and people change.
Exactly. Right. That's
what they know about it. Because...
Correct. Yeah. I think that's a feeling that I would have. There's also a question of the concept that it's better to not tell somebody something. Butov Yushogun Malyum Zidin doesn't necessarily apply to something which is a nida to the Nisr Karis. That applies to something which is either Durabon or it's not explicit in the Torah. But in cases which are explicit in the Torah, nida is pretty explicit in the Torah as being a Nisr Karis. To violate it, we don't necessarily apply that principle in the first place. Okay, I'm going to have to stop here. I apologize. I want to make sure we don't get too off topic here.
Something within the topic. It's explicit that it's Karis if she didn't go to the mikveh?
One more time?
Is it explicit in the... It's not explicit in the Torah that it's karetz if she didn't go to the mikveh. It's explicit that it's karetz when she's bleeding.
Okay, so we'll have to save that for another time.
That's cool.
Good point. We'll have to save that. Okay. All right. Let's go on here. The next point that we wanted to mention is if you missed, again, we mentioned if you missed some of the days, so then to the evidence, fine. If she missed day one or day seven, then you have a problem. Okay, so basically, even if you're going to say that you missed days during the middle, make sure that day one and day seven are definitely done. Some poskim and some kala teachers sometimes recommend that you don't have to do all the bedikas, or you could be more makel in certain situations. You got to be very careful, because if you miss either day one or day seven in a normal situation, let's say you miss day seven, she calls it the rav. You know, but after day seven is already over, it's the night she's supposed to go to the mikvah. She says, "I forgot to do my bedikah on day seven." She's finished. Okay, if she missed other bedikahs along the way, she is finished unless the following. Okay, if she missed day seven only, but she did all the other bedikahs on every other day, then she's okay. Anybody know why that is?
Chazaka.
Not only chazaka. No. She's got to do day one and day seven. But if she did all the other days, she did day one, two, three, four, five, and six, and she just missed day seven only, all you have to do is
another day.
Exactly. So then you can use your day two now as your day one. Okay, and then day three is day two, etc. So then when you miss day seven, that's really just day six, and just keep one more day, do the bedikah on the next day, and she can go to the mikvah the next night. That's why it's very important, even if you're going to skip bedikahs along the way, to make sure that just day one and day seven are kept, but also one or two days in the middle, so that even if she messes up, then you still keep. You can still.
The husband follows this. It's still the wife is Nehemani.
Correct. What I mentioned the first year, last week, I mentioned it's a good idea for the husband to sort of give his wife a reminder every day of Shiva Nikiyam, make sure to do a bedika, don't forget, whatever it is. That's the way that I think that a husband can help out in these situations, especially if the woman is, she's working, she's busy. So again, we mentioned this last time a little bit. If she's working or other things happen during the day, try to do the bedika at least one time in the morning, so that even if she forgets or she doesn't have time in the afternoon, at least she got her one bedika for the day down. Now, if it's irritated, if she has trouble with the bedikos, if the bedikos cause her pain, any of these kinds of situations, you need to speak to a rav. Generally speaking, what happens, there are a few options here. One option is to use some sort of lubrication, okay? Either what they call the KY jelly, Vaseline. Any of these cases, if she puts on a little bit, a few minutes, not immediately before the bedikah, but a few minutes before the bedikah, that often can help. Rabbi Willig also suggested wetting the bedikah cloth. Sometimes that helps. And the other option is to drop some of the bedikahs. The rav sometimes will say that you can drop some of the bedikahs. Either start with dropping from two to one each day, or he'll say drop one or two in the middle, okay? Any of the cases of, let's say, birth control, where she's constantly spotting, or other cases like that, often will say get rid of the middle days of bedikahs. The thing is, you just got to be careful that with day one and seven, that you keep those, and if you miss day seven, it might be worthwhile to make sure that you do at least one along the way as well, on day three or day four, just in case you lose day seven, so at least you can, you don't lose the entire week, you can start another day or two after that. In some situations, there are some achronim that, in a real shas adachak, there are some achronim and some rabbanim halacha lemaisa will be willing to drop even the one of the day one or day seven bedikas and just keep one or the other. But that's a real shas adachak, that's not usually done, but there are certain situations where that also, with rabbinic guidance, could be allowed. Okay. What else do we have here? So we didn't actually read it inside yet. We'll read it inside in just a minute. In terms of what you're supposed to do for the bedikah, I think this we mentioned last week as well. It's supposed to be a chorin of a stuff, and it's got to go into every single part of the area to make sure that that there is no blood anywhere that she can't find. It's got to be a thorough bedikah in general. Again, bedikah, but if it wasn't done, so it's not, except for the hafsik tara, the rest of them is not the worst thing in the world, but definitely supposed to be all in all the parts of the area where the blood comes from. In terms of the timing of the bedikas, so if you go back to the Shulchan Aruch, on the end of source number 3, he says here, "Vavadika tiyel or hayom velo or haner," that the bedikah is supposed to be in the daytime and not with the light of a candle, which, generally speaking, we paskin means not only not light of a candle, it means not at night, when the lighting is not sunlight. Again, we're not going to go into the details of this now, but it's generally assumed that the bedikah, which is based on the Torah pasuk of his Safarla, Shivasim Machar Titar, she should count 7 days and then she becomes Tahor. That's again referring to the Zava, but we extend that to the Nida. So that's Sefira. The Sefira in that situation seems to be assumed to be during the day. This is based on, I think, Tosfos. So the Sechus Nida mentions this point. So that's the Lecharchil again. B'di'evid, if she counted at night, B'di'evid Mahani Afil or Haner. B'di'evid, as long as she can look at it afterwards, it's not pitch black, that bedikah would also work, which we sometimes use b'di'evid if there are certain situations where it was already done at night, so then b'di'evid there's usually room to be makel. Other situations which sometimes come up is if she has some sort of procedure, or she knows that she has some sort of blood which is not coming from her period, from her menstrual cycle, which again we'll discuss more in a couple minutes, hopefully tonight, if not next week. So then there are ways to try to still make her clean, even though she's bleeding. One of the ways to do that is go to the doctor and have the doctor identify that she has some sort of maka, that she has some sort of wound which is causing her to bleed. And at that point, if she needs to go to the doctor and then do a bedika for the first day of Shivan Akiyam right after her Hefsek Tara, it could be she could do her bedika at the doctor that night and not wait till the next day because she's already at the doctor's office. Again, this is not always so practical, but I'm just giving an example of cases where it could be, we would say that you can do it at night if absolutely necessary. Again, the regular rules that we don't do that. Okay, that's basically the main questions for Shivan Akiyam. The other point that we were just going to mention before we go into Kesamim is the question of the maros. Okay, what are the colors that are problematic for bedikas? So this is going to apply both for bedika cloths, which again, as we're discussing, all the bedikas we're talking about should be done with a sterile bedika cloth. There are other things you could use also, but definitely the bedika cloth is the best thing to use because it's white, it's pre-checked, meaning it's sealed, so it's nothing. There's nothing else on it. That's ideally what you can use. If you can't use that, so then you try to use something else which is soft, which is not going to irritate the area, which is not ridiculously big, and is white, and makabel tuma. Those are the things that you try to get, some sort of old shirt or something like that. Again, those are other options which are not l'chachila, but if you have to, you can use those. The colors that you find basically on these types of things are going to be as follows. Colors that are permitted. Did I put this on the source sheet? If I put this here, we can read it inside. Yeah, it's here actually. Go to skip section number 3 at the very end. This is source number 12 now. I'll read. So the Shulchan says as follows: Kol mara adom beinim hikeha harbe o amok tmeim. All types of red, red colors. Again, either on a bedika cloth or, as we'll see a little bit later, on some sort of undergarment with a stain. If it is any type of red, either a dark red or a light red, tmeim. The halacha is that that's tamei. That is a problem. Meaning she is tamei. V'chein kol mara shachor. Similarly, any type of mara which is black is also tamei. We assume that that was red, which sort of got blackened over with time. That's also a problem. Parenthetically, today, many posts can usually assume today that it's not very common to find a black stain, even if something looks black. Rabbi Willig and some other rabbanim think that it's not really black, it's just a lot of layers of caked on brown. So that's something which is, again, worthwhile, really have to show to a rav. But generally speaking, today there are plenty of rabbanim that say that most cases which looks very dark could be just a dark brown rather than actual black. Brown, we'll see, we'll discuss in a minute. Okay, that's in terms of the colors that are problematic. The ein tahor el mar lavan v'chein mar yarok. The cases, the colors that are tahor are white, green, afilu kamara shava o hazav, even which is shah, which is a wax colored or a gold colored. The kol shekein hayorek hakarati, or a very dark colored green, o kasam, or the color of green grass. Those kinds of colors are usually assumed to be okay. Again, there are some that are machmer here, but in general, these colors are halachically permitted. That's how we paskin. Basically, the main question today, which comes up, is actually not in the Shulchan Aruch, believe it or not, and that is the question of what is the status of brown. Brown is probably the most common question, which is the most difficult question, the tricky question to rule on. The status of brown is as follows. It's actually a big machlokas. Let's read one opinion, which is generally how we pass it. In source 13 in the Pisrei Tshuva. So the Pisrei Tshuva says as follows. V'ayin v'sidrei tara. Take a look at the Sidrei Tara, which is one of the achronim in the back of the Shulchan Aruch. B'shem, one of the acronym, I forgot even who it is. Shadam hanota litzboa brown shu ke'en klipas armonim k'mo mashka, which in parentheses is coffee shu tahor. Okay, he says basically that anything a mara which is brown, which is similar to the color of the shell of armonim, which I actually do not remember what armonim is. Chestnut, that's what it is. Thank you very much. I apologize. I forgot to check. That type of chestnuts, or, actually it doesn't say or, kemoha mashka, coffee, like the color of coffee, that is considered to be tahor. V'ein sarach lomar v'kesem, and certainly that's true not only on a bedika cloth, but also on a kesem. V'fisha hu eino note la mimus, because it doesn't note, it doesn't lean towards, literally, lean towards is the literal translation. It doesn't have a reddish tinge.